Good to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. There's no doubt America has a love-hate relationship with political polls. When your candidate is up in the polls, it thrills you, right? When your candidate is trailing, though, what do? Well, you look perhaps desperately for a fault in the survey that says your candidate is behind. Tomorrow on this program, we'll examine the latest polling for midterm elections and find out what separates good polling from bad polling. Also, how polling has changed in recent years as more and more landline phones have disappeared. Politics and polling tomorrow on our Politics Day, Wednesday. The second half today, we'll be talking with Lynn Hicks. Lynn Hicks is the business editor at the Des Moines Register. He's just finished a week-long series on agricultural ties between Iowa and China. Lynn Hicks, welcome to our program.
Thanks, Ben. Happy to be here.
I understand you spent about 3 weeks in China, visited 9 cities, 7 provinces, and did a whole series of articles looking at different facets here. Let's talk a little bit about the first facet that you dealt with, which is modernization. Where are farms in China, generally speaking, in terms of modern farming practices, say, compared to Iowa farmers?
Well, Ben, it really depends on where you go, and that's one of the reasons we took our whirlwind trip to China. It depends a lot on what part of the country you're in, but there are some areas that seem very similar to Iowa, for example, in the Northeast, where the farms are larger and you will find John Deere combines and mechanized planters. But we went to a lot of places where people were using for the very first time this harvest are using wheat harvesters that have been converted for combining corn, for example. So China is still a long ways off. It's really only been 10 years since they've undergone a campaign to modernize implements.
Mm-hmm. Do you see farms of all different sizes then as well?
You do, but you have to keep in mind that China has very small farms. Typically 1 to 2 acres at most. And so that's a lot of the farmers we met. A lot of those farmers also want to expand. They're very interested in getting more land. Some of the state-owned farms are larger, but, right now and for the foreseeable future, most of the crops will be grown on very small plots.
Mm-hmm. Help us understand the relationship there between the farmer and the land. Can you own a farm in China?
No. What the state still owns land in China. The people in the villages have land rights and typically will have less than an acre, and they are able to The situation varies across the country, but they are able to lease the land out to others. There are starting to be organized efforts for larger farmers to rent the land. And part of the issue is a lot of people are going to the cities because that's where the jobs are. That's where the factories, good factory jobs are. And so they're moving to the cities, leaving the land behind for and looking for people to farm it for them.
Do you see farms, however small, handed down from generation to generation as you would in Iowa?
Yeah, that's a lot of what's happening, though, is that a lot of the farmers we talk to, their kids aren't around anymore. They're working these jobs in the cities. So they don't necessarily have anybody to hand the land over to. So they may be also looking at ways to, find others to farm the land.
Tell us about a facet where Iowa fits into the picture in terms of China modernizing its agriculture.
Right. Well, we found a lot of connections as China agriculture modernizes. It's really a huge market for Iowa agribusinesses, whether you're selling modern hybrid seed, implements like I talked about, feed additives, livestock genetics, other technology like that. So all of these trends, as China gets bigger, Iowa companies see an opportunity to become involved in it.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some specific commodities. Pork consumption very high in China, expected to increase. What part does Iowa play in feeding China the pork that it demands?
Yeah, well, Iowa's role is going to change, and it depends a lot on what China decides to do with their pork production. They are a huge consumer of pork, and if China and their demand is expected to continue to increase, if China decides to produce most of its pork, it's going to turn for feed to places like Iowa. It's already a huge importer of soybeans. It's expected to import more corn. So that will benefit Iowa. Also, there's Iowa companies there helping them set up modern pork operations, confinements, helping them with feed additives, trying to reduce the amount of antibiotics, all across the board.
Mm-hmm. We hear a lot. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. And then if China decides that the cost of pork production is too much, then it may decide to import. And we're starting to see that happen just a little bit. But let's say that China opens its doors. It's going to be a huge market. It could actually be equal to doubling the entire amount of pork the United States produces. And so that's obviously a huge opportunity for Iowa farmers, but it also comes at cost of, you know, how much pork can Iowa actually produce? What are the environmental issues related to that?
Right.
So, you know, what China does is going to have a direct impact on Iowa.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the environmental issues, because often in connection with China and the rapidly growing businesses in China, the economy growing, we hear mostly about the environmental problems connected with the large cities, the air pollution, water pollution, and so forth. What kind of impact is the rapid growth of agriculture having on the environment?
Well, agriculture is now considered the biggest polluter in China. That was a study that the Chinese government did about 3 years ago. And it is directly related to pork production, in part because of some of the pollution, the water pollution that's happening, and the increase in corn production as well has led to environmental concerns. And so this is a debate that's happening in China, is how far they can go to produce. And the other factor is that China is running out of arable land. It has a lot of problems with pollution, too much use of pesticides, heavy metals that are affecting the soils. So China has to decide how much it can actually produce on its own land. And there is a debate going on in the Chinese government. Maybe it's better to import pork, for example, and leave the pollution to the U.S. and other places.
Lynn Hicks is joining me this half hour, business editor at the Des Moines Register. He's co-author of Feeding China. It's a series that's been running this week, past week, in the Des Moines Register, along with photographer Rodney White. They were in China for about 3 weeks, visiting a number of cities and provinces and looking at various connections between agriculture in China and agriculture in Iowa. If you'd like to join our conversation with a question or a comment, perhaps your farm or your farming industry has some connection with China you'd like to share with us, 1-866-780-9100, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Let's go to some of these very interesting connections you brought out in your series. A hatchery in Perry, Iowa, with a connection to China. Tell us about that, Lynn.
Well, Highline International is one of those central Iowa companies that maybe not a lot of people know about, but they have a huge global impact. They are considered one of the top of the world in genetics of poultry, chick genetics. So they raise them there in places like Perry and Dallas Center. And the chicks are shipped around the world, including to China. So there are these large FedEx planes and Air China transports leaving from Chicago and Indianapolis full of baby chicks that'll go to Beijing and Shanghai and then eventually to these breeding farms. And we were able, through Highline, we were able to go to one of their customers, the Huayu Group in Hebei Province, which is Iowa's sister city, sister state. And we were able to see how two companies, Iowa and China, are working together to try to improve the egg production business, to improve the genetics over there, and for that helping that company to expand. So it's interesting to see how, you know, that an Iowa company is finding a market there and a Chinese company, as a result, is expanding.
Why would China not produce its own chicks?
Well, they are they're breeding their own. They have their own breeding farms, but they consider the genetics that is coming from this Iowa company to be the best, and from the standpoint of disease resistance and how hardy the chicks are and their productivity. And it's a little like why a Chinese company should use Pioneer seed. You know, they think that that's the best genetics, and so that company, those companies have gone into China, found a market, and are excelling.
Let's talk about another aspect that you focused on in one of your series, alternative agriculture. In fact, there's an Iowa native, Jim Spear, involved in that you looked at here. Tell us about this.
Right. Well, Jim grew up in Marshalltown, Iowa. Went to high school in Marshalltown, and went to Iowa State for a while. Ended up in China, and Jim has created an eco resort near the Great Wall near Mutan Yu. And what he has done there is pretty remarkable, in that all he did was try to start out creating a business, and it's created jobs and investment in this small village. And as a result, the Chinese government kind of holds this up as a model of how you can help a small village survive, not through state control or a five-year plan, but by private investment. And what we saw there is what's happening all over China, and that's that this capitalist spirit, you might call it, you know, entrepreneurial initiative that we saw throughout the agriculture industry in China, of people, you know, wanting to expand, wanting to grow, and seeing a big opportunity in agriculture.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the environment, do you think the Chinese, they seem to have really big problems? Are they more environmentally conscious than us, more concerned about the future? How would you gauge that?
Well, they are. I would say that the Chinese consumers and the Chinese people are very concerned about the environment right now. It is considered one of the top concerns when people are polled. And they're concerned both about the environment and the quality and the safety of their food. And so I think that's one reason you're seeing both the government in China and some of these agribusinesses responding to them and responding to their concerns, because I think the overall concern is that people are Chinese consumers can choose. They can choose imported products, and they can also choose where they want to put their money, and they can choose even if they have the means whether to get out of the country or not. And so I think that is why it's a big concern of the government and the party right now.
Lynn Hicks is a business editor at the Des Moines Register and co-author of the new Feeding China series, along with photographer Rodney White, telling us about some of the aspects that he covered in the approximately three-week visit to various parts of China, looking at the agricultural connections between China and Iowa. As part of your series, you looked at some of the main stakeholders, Lynn. Harry Stein is a name that not many of us know, but he is the founder of Stein Seed and considered the wealthiest man in Iowa. Forbes magazine estimating his fortune at over $2 billion, and he has a connection with China. What is it?
Well, Harry's been going to China for several years, but he also is selling his seed, or he will be soon selling Stein seed in China. He also sees a market there, and he believes that Chinese farmers, as well as Iowa farmers, can be changing the way they plant corn, planting the plants closer together, more plants per acre, and he sees that as an opportunity to increase yields, increase corn yields in China and elsewhere. So yeah, he's one of many people who sees the opportunity there. Harry says that, you know, he can, because of the financial position he's in, he's got the patience that he can wait and survive that market.
Talk a little bit about women's role in agriculture there. Compare it to perhaps here, or what did you find out?
Well, we were a bit surprised that when we went to a field demonstration in the Yellow River Valley in central China, we were invited to by DuPont Pioneer to this field demonstration, and we got there, and you know, I expect that you know, a lot of farmers there, you know, with their Pioneer seed caps, and we get there, and there's a bus, and out comes women. It was full of women who had come from miles around to buy Pioneer seed corn. And the reason was that they were responsible. They were the ones who made the decision of what seed to plant on their farm. Large part, their husbands had moved to jobs in the cities, were working in the factories. That was the primary source of income. And they were the ones who were farming these small plots of land. And, you know, they would have, you know, the decision that will going forward is whether they will continue to farm that land, or will they feel the pressure, financial or otherwise, to sell out the land to larger producers. And the Chinese government does want a more concerted effort on consolidating the land. And so, you know, they would like, you know, either the people who are working the jobs in the cities to come back and farm the land, or to rent it out to bigger producers.
Do they have the problem here, as in Iowa, where younger people are, they want to recruit younger people to stay on the land and farm?
Yeah, that's a big issue as well. And that's a big issue behind the mechanization, is simply that the farm labor isn't there. The younger people have gone to the cities to work. And so there is an effort to try to get younger people involved in agriculture. And we did see, you know, maybe not necessarily, you know, working the land, but there are a lot of talented people, educated people that are moving from other industries into agriculture because they see the opportunity there.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier that the type of corn that they're suggesting there is to have shorter corn and sort of planted closer together. Why would that be? Does that fit the climate? Why would that be different than in what is optimal for Iowa?
Well, Harry Stein argues that it is optimal for Iowa, that if you plant more corn plants per acre, you're going to lead to greater productivity. You know, he says it's a throwback to have corn spaced so wide that you can originally we had it so a horse could go through the corn rows. And it's over time we've gotten narrower, but he says we can do even better. It can be done in Iowa. It can be done in China, he argues. But generally in China, the corn plant populations are pretty low. And so there is a greater effort to plant closer together, to plant more seeds per acre, mechanization will help that trend as well.
It was only decades ago that famine and hunger claimed millions of lives in China. It's come a long way in feeding itself. What do you see, or what do experts, you talk about World Food Prize experts, for instance, How do they see the future for China? How much should China feed itself, and how much should it rely on other countries?
Well, that's a big question right now, is what how China should approach that. And it's going to have an impact around the world, as we could see prices rise depending on how much China goes into the market to buy. I think how China will approach this is how quickly they modernize, how they handle the consolidation of the land, so they preserve the farmers' rights, yet are able to create bigger plots so people are more financially able to farm the land. Are the farmers there getting the right kind of equipment? Are they getting are they planting environmentally correct ways? Are they using fertilizer in the right ways? All of that kind of knowledge and the kind of things that, you know, Iowa State Extension and the groups like that have done here needs to happen there, needs to continue to happen for China to catch up with yields and productivity to other countries.
Lynn Hicks, business editor at the Des Moines Register, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Co-author of the Feeding China series in the Des Moines Register with photographer Rodney White about his three-week visit to 9 cities, 7 provinces in China, looking at agricultural connections between China and Iowa. Tomorrow on this program, we'll talk about political polling for Politics Day. We'll hope you join us for that. River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.